Hello everyone, this is James and welcome to the Notorious Banker Podcast. 2,974 amazing followers at Bank Better Guy on Twitter. Dozens more at patreon.com/notoriousbanker, where for as little as a $1 subscription, you can help me, the Notorious Banker, fight back against big banks for the little guy. And over 5,600 strong at Notorious Banker on TikTok. Yes, even on TikTok. Guys, once again, thank you so very much for your love and support. I really do appreciate it. And I got to tell you, it's been an interesting week. It's been a very, very strong week at Bank Better Guy on Twitter, especially. We've been talking to a lot of people about things going on with PPP loans again. And there are so many people that are shut out of PPP loans through no fault of their own, especially with Bank of America and Wells, Bank of America especially. You know, whenever the government says that there's going to be help out there for the small business owner, you know, the small business owner says, hey, sweet, I'm just going to go to my local bank and get it done. Well, you know, a place like Bank of America makes it that much more difficult to do because they want you to do everything yourself online. You don't have, you know, communication with a small business banker. And you're getting these errors. You're getting these responses saying that your documents aren't being submitted. You submit them again the next day. You get the email saying that you need to submit them again. It's chaos. And I've been running into a lot of people who are running into the same errors. And I've helped as many people as I possibly can. I've helped somewhere over 100 people in the last week, answering general questions about PPP, just letting them know basically chain of command at Bank of America, Wells Fargo, where to get help, because a lot of people are running out of time. A lot of people are running out of time with the banks and with their small businesses in order to get this done. So I want them to get that done. So I've been really productive, really busy with that, working 15-hour days the way that I only know how to do. Hell, I work while I have a needle stuck in my arm when I donate plasma for $500 a month. That's how hard I work. This for the general public here. The Notorious Banker Project is meant to help the little guy fight back against big banks, but it's also to help guide them whenever they're at a big bank. Because you know what? Sometimes that's your bank, and that's where you want to be. And sometimes it's not always the easiest of terms to bank at one of those places. But I know that it could be easier with a little bit of elbow grease. The average customer stands a chance as long as they are being heard. And most of the time, they're not being heard by anyone. Because the system is set up for you to do everything strictly online. And as I've told you a million times in the 130 plus podcasts we've done here, online banking isn't for everyone, and online banking doesn't successfully serve the customer when it comes to customer experience or, you know, problem handling. And that's a big part of my project, is making sure that banks are aware that there are problems that are happening with their clients, and instead of ignoring them, you're going to have to deal with them, because with my brand of Vigilante Customer Service, I'm going to make sure that that customer is being heard, because I was helping upwards of 50 customers a day while I was working at Bank of America. I was opening maybe 10 accounts a day. I introduced thousands of people to this crazy big banking world. I feel a little guilty. I feel a little responsible. So now that I'm no longer working for those people, I can actually help them the way that they need to be helped. And I'm going to continue to do so. So yes, this week was a pretty busy week. Got a chance to talk to a couple of reporters as well. Hopefully there's some fruit on the vine there. I'm really looking forward to conversations about my project and what I do, because I'm starting to put myself a little bit more out there. I'll be blunt with you. There are topics like we're going to be talking about today in regards to race and banking, which are really important to talk about. And I know that, honestly, I'll be frank with you, I know that that's not everyone's cup of tea, you know, but it's important. It's, you know, I'm recording this with 1 hour to go on Black History Month, and I really think that a lot of people need to realize that there are some serious problems with banking out there, and a lot of them aren't just I can't get a home loan type of thing, although we will talk about that in the second segment here. You know, it's more subtle things like, you know, using bank closures, using COVID reasons for bank closures in certain parts of the country. And possibly, and we've talked about this with Bank of America before, not reopening those locations, saying, oh, you know, online banking is a hell of a thing and so many people are using it that, you know, we decided not to reopen this branch. Today's topic was something that actually just kind of sprung up a few hours ago, actually. And it was something that I read on BizJournals.com article. And I've learned to take those articles with a grain of salt. I have been told that the people who run those magazines aren't necessarily the sharpest tools in the shed. I will say it that way. But Birmingham, Alabama. Alabama is a state that I've never been to. The only thing I really know about Alabama is Forrest Gump and Alabama football. But they have some banks there, of course, like just like anywhere else. And Wells Fargo has some news about a couple of branches in the Birmingham area that are one's going to permanently close and one's temporarily closed. And after this brief promotional consideration, I'm going to tell you the story about these two branches in two very different parts of the Birmingham area. One is 90% white and wealthy, and the other is 75% black, and I'll be frank with you, not so wealthy. One is temporarily closed due to staffing issues related to COVID, so they say, and the other one is due to close. Jobs are going to be lost, and possibly two branches are not going to reopen for two very different reasons. So after this brief promotional consideration, I'm going to get into that. And then the second segment, I'm just going to kind of briefly rehash what I talked about in July, after the George Floyd incident and everything that happened, in the month of June. I did a video where I talked about how Bank of America spent about 3 cents on the dollar for black communities in the city of Chicago when it came to home lending. I just want to get into that briefly because there's an alderman for the city of Chicago that mentioned it. He invited all the big banks to have a discussion about mortgages in the city of Chicago and why African Americans are not getting the home loans at the rate that white people do in a city that's 40% African American or so. So I'm going to just briefly get into that and just talk about that some more. But I really do believe on this last day of Black History Month, we need to talk about these things because it's really serious. And frankly, I don't think these things are properly talked about. So after this, we'll talk about it some more. So please stick around. Hey everyone, it's James, the Notorious Banker, and you may have heard me talk about my Patreon page on my podcast. It's patreon.com/notoriousbanker, where for as little as a $1 subscription, you can help yours truly, the Notorious Banker, continue to fight back against big banks. But I also want to let you know I do accept Cash App, Venmo, and PayPal as well. For information on how to send me contributions through those means, go to james@thenotoriousbanker.com or direct message me at BankBetterGuy on Twitter. What is your contribution to the Notorious Banker do? Well, it allows you additional content that may not be available for someone who does not contribute. Plus, you allow yours truly to stay here and work full-time for the little guy fighting back against the big banks such as Bank of America, Chase, Citi, and Wells Fargo. I work hard, I work like hell, and I get things done. So your contribution allows me to pay the bills to continue to function as the Notorious Banker. So if you have the means, I would graciously appreciate any donation that you would love to give to the Notorious Banker Project as we continue to fight back against big banks. All right, we're back with more Notorious Banker. So if you've listened to my podcast religiously, well, and if you have, thank you very much. You've allowed me to continue on with this project for going on 2.5 years now. It was just a pipe dream, it was just in my brain that, hey, I can talk about how bad banks are because I worked at one and frankly, I have stories to tell. Well, the stories that I have to tell are, they were mostly about me when I started, and then it started becoming about other people. And then it started becoming about places that I've never been to and people that I've never met and ideas that I never thought about in the sense that, hey, I worked at a bank and I understand kind of how things are. So there's no way that this thing that a bank is selling to the public could be so based on what I know about the internal politics or just the internal struggle that people have working at a financial institution. It's just the truth, It's just the way that it is. I've developed more of a guilty conscience because of what I did for 13 years, opening accounts for people, overselling them, and not providing the best customer service that I could have provided, but that was based on my managers telling me to focus on sales and not service. But I also have developed a pretty strong conscience in the fact that I'm going to do what I can to inform customers that they need to steer clear of big banks for various reasons. And yes, we could talk about fees, we can talk about poor service, and hell, we could even talk about denying customer service. And that's what we're going to talk about here shortly. But a lot of the times, racism is something that you know, especially in light of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, all these incidents that happened in the last year. And, you know, I've talked about it on various podcasts, but I've also become stronger and firmer in my beliefs that things need to change, both in a society and in the banking industry as well, because I have dedicated a lot of my podcast to racism, to what I feel is discrimination in the banking industry. And it's something that I didn't really intend on doing. I wanted to talk about fees. I wanted to talk about overselling of accounts like Wells Fargo did and everything. But this, damn it, is one of the more important things that we need to talk about. I'm going to talk about it here. So, you know, if it's something that's not your cup of tea, then I gladly invite you to another podcast. But damn it, you really should listen to this because it's important, okay? So, you know, here's the thing. I am a Mexican-American man. I'm 37, about to be 38 in a month. I'm not at the middle of my life, at least I like to not think that. I want to live to be 120, for God's sakes. But I'm also aware that in the 37-plus years that I've lived, that, you know, we've come a long way when it comes to, you know, having our first African-American president, to having the first woman of color be vice president, to have all these firsts is really, really cool. But, you know, let's be honest with ourselves here. There's a lot of things that are just status quo, and especially in communities of color. Now, growing up Mexican-American, I grew up in a town that was predominantly Mexican-American. I didn't know that, you know, very many black people. I didn't know very many white people that weren't, you know, my doctors and teachers and whatnot. So it was a very sheltered community. And it wasn't until I moved to a bigger city that I got introduced to different cultures. You know, I was in a college town in the city that I was born in, but it's a small town. But in a town of 100,000 people, you meet so many people from diverse backgrounds. And working in banking was really cool. You know, I had an Asian American first manager at Bank of America. My second manager was African American over here in Las Cruces. And I've mentioned on many podcasts that her and I didn't always get along. And it was more because she was kind of a micromanager, and I didn't really get that or understand that until she left, until she was forced into retirement. And then taking on responsibility post her retirement, bringing in a new branch manager for my location and everything, which was a white woman, you see the difference in how one manager was handled to the next. So I started to see those things, and I started to get it a lot more. And I started to understand that a lot of the reason that my previous boss was such a micromanager was because it seemed like she had to throw a perfect game. She had to have perfection. Otherwise, her ass was out the door. And that was not fair to her. Because you know what? Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone works hard when they're working in banking. But people are treated differently in banking. Customers, yes, they are treated differently. It's sad to say, but it's true. And, you know, I've said it before, you know, there's been videos where people were refused to cash their check because they were black. And, you know, there's this whole viral video where the person's boss went to the bank to confront the bank about that. Basically, the bank saying that that guy's check was bad when it wasn't. Everyone else cashed their check, but the black guy goes into Bank of America and they tell him they need to, quote, verify the check. And even as a business owner, the boss, I would be pissed. Are you implying that my check is bad? My check, the one where I have X amount of thousands of dollars in that account? No, you're giving him shit because he's black. These are conversations that I have now with people because I've seen those things in person. And working in the banking industry, you know, the main reason why certain things are done. But you also don't know the underlying reason things are done. And the fact of the matter is, they don't want people standing in line to cash their checks that are never going to have an account with them because they're wasting our time. And there's no fee we could charge them to cash their check that we're ever going to make a lot of money off of them. So we'd rather say, hey, you know what? Go take this to your bank to cash the check. And we're going to help our customers. Thank you very much. And that's the way Bank of America was. And it's basically inviting only a certain clientele of customers to come into the branch. That way we can oversell them. That way we can upsell them. Well, you know, cue Birmingham, Alabama, of all places. And, you know, I've never been to Alabama, so I can't speak to the state. I don't know the demographics of the state other than I know that's, you know, heavily African-American in some communities. And, of course, the scourge of segregation, the scourge of racism is still there. This is a state where, former President Trump won by a healthy margin, because that's just kind of the way that the politics are in a place like Alabama. And I'm not going to be talking about another state and how they do things, because I don't know. And there's other people from Alabama that could tell me a hell of a lot more than I can speculate on. But I know banks, okay? And I know banks really well. And if there was a state of Wells Fargo or a state of Bank of America, well, I would be experts in state politics for those two states. But we're going to talk about Wells Fargo here because, I'm on a Sunday morning. It's not really busy on Twitter. There's a couple of people complaining about banks, but hell, even, bitching about banks takes a day off from here and there. But there was a bizjournals.com article, Birmingham Business Journal. And, I see these articles, and a lot of the times they're very pro-bank. But there was this one in the Birmingham one where it says Wells Fargo to close branch in Vestavia Hills, or Vestavia Hills. I don't know how to pronounce that. And, usually with branch closures, I want to see the demographics of the town that the branch is closing, because I have it in my head that it's predominantly Black, predominantly Hispanic, or, a poor area like the branch that I worked at that closed down. It doesn't have a lot of money, has a lot of homeless people or whatever. It doesn't have a lot of wealthy customers. So, a lot of banks feel that it's an unnecessary expense and they want to get rid of it because there's nothing that they could possibly do to justify the cost of paying the lease, paying the electric bill, and paying, 5 to 12 staffers. But this is by Angel Coker of the Birmingham Business Journal. And it says, Wells Fargo in the Birmingham market will soon close permanently. The bank's Rocky Ridge branch at 2527 Rocky Ridge Road in Birmingham is scheduled to close on May 5th. Happy Cinco de Mayo to you. The bank is recommending customers to go to the nearby branch at 641 Montgomery Highway in Vestavia Hills. So the thing with this is, branch closure, not the biggest news in the world. In fact, it's something that I'm so used to now. But what can I say? Whenever a branch closes, it's impacting a shit ton of people. It's impacting a lot of people. And you're like, well, who is it going to impact and what's it going to impact? And of course, like I said, I have it in my head that it's going to impact people of color or people who don't have a lot of money, one or the other or both. But then I took a look at this Vestavia. I'm going to butcher this a million times. So let's just say Vestavia. Vestavia Hills, Alabama. I just did a search for the zip code. And, population 34,000. Well, it's part of a bigger city in Birmingham, so it's not bad. And then it says poverty rate, 3.85%. Well, I always knew Alabama to be poor. That's just one of those stereotypes that you get ingrained in your head. And then for Vestavia Hills, Alabama, median household income, $105,218. And I'm like, holy shit, that's actually way above average. And then I saw what the median property value is, $364,000. $364,000. My house is worth one half that, for God's sakes. To put it into perspective, the median income in my hometown, in my zip code, and I live upper middle class in Las Cruces, New Mexico, is $40,658 a year. The median income is $105,000 in Vestavia Hills, Alabama, so it's not poor by any means. Median property value, $364,000, far outweighs my hometown. You see all that, and you're like, wow, that's crazy. That must be the rich part of town. I mean, it has hills in there, and usually when you live in a hills, typically is a rich part of town. It's just the way that it is. Then I wanted to look at the demographics, just kind of see, maybe it's mostly Black or whatever. 87.7% white, according to this demographic thing that I found on Google here. That zip code where they're closing the branch is 87.7% white, median income of $105,000. And you're like, shit, this is a rich neighborhood. Why is Wells Fargo closing in this rich part of town? Well, I'll get to that in a second, okay? So I'm going to continue to read the rest of this article here. It says, in addition, the bank's Eastlake branch at 7524 First Avenue North is temporarily shut down. A Wells Fargo spokesperson told the BBJ the branch closed due to staffing constraints, but the branch will resume operations as soon as possible. Well, that sounds nice. That sounds comforting, right? As soon as possible. As soon as possible for what? And then we get back to that staffing constraints thing. Bank of America is using COVID as an excuse to close branches, saying that they're understaffed. It makes it seem like they're getting the virus every fucking day, which is not true. It is not true. People are getting it. Yes, I actually know some people at the branch that I got fired in who had COVID. They didn't shut the branch down. I know they didn't. And that's a branch that doesn't have a lot of people. They figured it out. And I'll get to a second in a second what's going on with that. And then the next paragraph is just sounds like it's from Wells Fargo itself, and it's fucking ridiculous. Wells Fargo has been shaking up its branch network like many other banks as customers move more towards technology-based platforms for banking, like mobile and online options. Now, I don't want to question the bias of the Business Journal of Birmingham, Alabama. That sounds like that's carbon copied from a Wells Fargo website. Technology-based platforms like mobile and online banking, yes, it's true. There's more people than there was 10 years ago because 10 years ago it didn't really exist. But they're not shaking up the branch network for that. They're shaking up their branch network because they're losing money. They're losing billions of dollars, and they're basically saying, who can we get rid of in order to get rid of this clientele, get rid of these branches? That way we can save millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars. So they're not doing that in order to basically say, oh, our customers are so smart or whatever. They're saying, fuck that. We're wasting too much money and we're not getting anything out of these places. And then it says, last paragraph here, I'll skip the other one where it says the Wells Fargo Tower was renamed. There's a million Wells Fargo Towers all over the country. Lee Collier, Wells Fargo Central Alabama Region Bank President. That title, that just basically says, I make $100,000 a year doing absolutely nothing. No offense, Lee. Previously told the BBJ, the shift of the banking model to more digital-based banking allowed the bank to reduce space. Okay, so it allowed the bank to reduce space, huh? Okay, that's fine. And you know what? I may actually agree with that for 2527 Rocky Ridge Road in Birmingham. I mentioned all the demographics, 105,000 median income, 364,000 median property, and 87.7% white. That's fine. So, one of the things that I've talked about is banks want rich customers, and then they want rich customers who don't bother them. They want to be able to upsell them, and they want to be able to get as many accounts and as many loans as possible, credit cards or whatever. And then they want to teach them how to use ATMs or how to use mobile banking or to use other sources of banking other than walking into a brick and mortar, talking to three different people who are making at least $20 an hour before they exit. The bank doesn't want that because that costs a lot of money for that person to come in maybe once or twice a year, much less once or twice a week. You cut to 7524 First Avenue North. And whenever I did the Google search for 7524 First Avenue North, every First Avenue or First Street or Second Street in every city that I've been in typically is a place where it's a little bit more lower class. It is. And the First Street in my hometown of Socorro, New Mexico, is where the trailer park is. There's a First Street in this town that is on the poorer side of town. So First Avenue, I immediately think that it's got to be a more, urban community or a more lower income community. And that's exactly what I thought. So then I did a Google search for the zip code for this part of Birmingham, Alabama, which is 35206. So once I did the 35206 demographics, I was totally blown away here. So the first thing that you see whenever you search 35206 zip code demographics, racial majority, African American 74.13%. So 3 out of every 4 people in the same town in Birmingham, Alabama zip code are African American in this community. Couple that with the 87.7% in Vestavia Hills, a suburb of Birmingham. Both these branches are closed. So what's the correlation here? Well, I'll tell you the correlation in just a second, but just telling you the demographics about this place being three quarters African American, is it's commonplace in a state like Alabama, of course. Then I was looking at education, and it says that 83% of people have a high school diploma or lower. Only 16% have a college degree or above, doctoral or professional degree, whatever. And then you look at the median incomes, the median house value. And I mentioned the median house value in Vestavia Hills, $364,000. The median house value in this zip code, 35206, $82,000. basically, you know, 1/4 of Vestavia Hills. And the median house value in the state of Alabama is $154,000. So it's half the median house value of just the state of Alabama, which can include more rural parts as well. But it's 1/4 the value of the rich part of town. It fucking blows my mind. And then it just says salary and wage, $27,399 on average in this zip code. The state's average salary wage is $43,822. And I told you the median income of Vestavia Hills is $106,000. $105,218 to be specific. So basically 1/4 the amount of income in 35206. And that just blows my mind. This is a working class place, a lower class place. This is a place that struggles paycheck to paycheck, that goes to the bank every Friday. And typically people who are lower income workers get paid weekly and not biweekly. And they don't get direct deposit. They get a paper check. They rely on going to the bank to stand in a line to go cash their check so they can pay their bills, so they can go pay the electric bill and pay their rent. And all this other shit. Well, this branch in Birmingham has been temporarily closed due to staffing issues. Now, you couple that with the Vestavia Hills situation where they're closing a branch on May the 5th. And although Bank of America spokespeople are saying that the one on First Avenue, the place that has 27,000 median income, 3/4 black, and 83% of people who only have a high school education, that branch is closed until further notice, and we're going to try to reopen it as soon as possible. What if I told you I don't think that they're going to reopen it? In fact, I think they announced the closure of the, quote, rich person's branch first. That way they can quietly not reopen the place in the lower income side of town. Hear me out on this, okay? So you have a lot of things that are going for you in a rich part of town. Especially if you're a banker, man. You got rich people going in there. If you could upsell them, you get noticed really quickly. It's like, wow, James had a $600,000 mortgage the other day. Good job, James. And those people get you promotions. Those people get you bonuses like you wouldn't believe. When you work in a working class neighborhood like I did, like this First Avenue branch in Birmingham is, you have to work your ass off to make sure that you hit your goal, because the goals are so high at banks like that. And then the people who go in don't make nearly enough money. They're not going to buy houses. They're probably not even going to get approved for credit cards. You have to work your ass off to do that. And big banks' MO is basically like, hey, we want to find the easiest way to hit our sales goals, our sales quotas, and we want to make sure that these people don't come back. We want to make sure that we show them how to use our technology, and once we max them out, once we get everything we need from them, that they can kind of figure out their banking journey themselves using the app and using the website and using our ATMs for deposit and withdrawals as well. That's as simple as that, right? Well, in a place like the working class neighborhoods where people don't have time, they don't have the money, and sometimes they don't have the technology when it comes to having computers in their house, internet access at their house, or even a decent cell phone to do mobile banking, then that's a problem. And you have older folks in those communities who are just not tech savvy, and they rely on the bank to get their money out. And they're afraid of debit cards. They're afraid of online banking. They're afraid of everything except going in to go see a nice teller and getting a sucker from the bowl right next to the teller window. So, I made a tweet about this, and I basically said, in the rich neighborhood, Wells is working their ass off to get these rich people to sign up to, bring everything with them to Wells Fargo. But a lot of rich people, and I could tell you this with the few rich people that I knew working at Bank of America, they don't like the model of a Bank of America or Wells Fargo, because they know it's rigid. They know that like interest rates on savings accounts pay shit. They know that the investment part, like Merrill Lynch or Bank or Wells Fargo Investment Services, they're not really knowledgeable at stuff. They are there basically to have a service job and not to have any skill or expertise. Because if they had skill or expertise in trying to sell you on investments, they'd be working at a higher end firm. And you go to the black neighborhoods and, people are working hard for every dollar. They're struggling. I grew up in a neighborhood like that was mostly Mexican American, and I know it's the same type of struggle. But when the branch closes down, you're like, dude, why are you doing this? Because at that point in time, people go in to go cash their checks. Like I said, most people who are lower income get paper checks. They don't get direct deposit. They have bad credit, so they're not going to be able to buy a house in the future. They're going to be stuck forever renting. They won't even be able to get a credit card. Whenever they have to buy something expensive, they ask their mom or they ask a family member or a friend to borrow their credit card to make a major purchase. To Wells Fargo, those clients are useless to them. Because to Wells Fargo, having someone with a $100 average daily balance, no strong credit history to borrow, and to actually stand in line with a paper check, you know, talking to the manager while you're standing in line, talking to a teller, getting cash from their till, which costs Wells Fargo thousands of dollars to ship this cash around every single day to all of its branches, you're costing them money. In fact, you're losing them money. So of course, Wells Fargo is going to say, hey, let's close this branch down, because all these people aren't ever going to buy anything, and all they want is service shit. All they want is to cash their checks. We have to spend a lot of money to bring money in so we can give them money, and they're going to work with cash because they don't want to use debit cards. And then we ask them to go online and make a deposit and check. They either don't want to use the app or they don't know how, and they're not willing to learn. Wells Fargo, you know, is doing what Bank of America did to my branch in 2018. It's a class thing. You know, Wells Fargo wants to be in locations where it can make the most money with the least amount of work. You have to work harder when you're in a working class neighborhood, and big banks don't want to do that. Big banks want the quick score. You know, big banks don't want to work and develop relationships and help, you know, restore someone's credit and get them to a point of home ownership. I know this. I've had people declined for home loans where the person on the other end of the line, the home loan officer, is not even giving them general advice on how to improve their credit score, because that other person's already looking forward to the next call where maybe they can get a home loan application, for God's sakes. But as I mentioned, in the mostly black area where Wells Fargo is temporarily closed, the staffing issues thing is so stupid, because I said it, big banks are using COVID as an excuse to temporarily close branches for the safety of our staff and for our customers, yet they'll have one or two branches in a major city open where everyone congregates, and it's a 2-hour wait to do anything over there because of social distancing and all the protocols that, of course, banks have to do. But a lot of people who still want to choose to bank with a branch will wait that time, and then they'll complain and bitch about it. So whenever you say staffing issues, it's kind of weird, because the bank is temporarily closing those branches, so they basically created their own staffing issue to make sure that it's not reopened, because if they either laid off or furloughed those employees or do what Bank of America did and had them work from home, they just can't willy-nilly go to the next branch, you know, saying, hey, we closed the First Avenue address, but hey, go to Vestavia Hills because they need some people over there because more people are going to that branch. No, it doesn't work that way with banks. Sharing staff was always commonplace at Bank of America and at Wells Fargo. I know people that worked at Wells Fargo. One of my best friends at Bank of America, her husband was a banker at Wells Fargo. And two people that I've trained at Bank of America went on to become bankers at Wells Fargo. I still talk to them. I'm still familiar with the processes. Sharing staff between branches is not a rare thing. That's commonplace at a bank like that. So why does that matter? So on May 5th, whenever this place closes down, Vestavia Hills, this rich part of town, the branch and the black side of town is going to still be closed temporarily, right? So does that mean the people that are going to lose their jobs at Vestavia Hills, the rich part of town, are not going to be able to transfer over to the First Avenue branch, the one that has staffing issues? Absolutely not. They're not going to transfer. They're either going to lose their jobs or they're going to be asked to apply somewhere else within the company. Of course, Wells Fargo is not going to make it easy and say, hey, we close this one branch. Let's just move you over to this side of town and you can continue on as your job starting on Monday. No, bullshit. They're not going to do that. They're lying. They tried to shoot their shot with rich people and they failed miserably. So that bank is closing because they couldn't get any more rich customers, and they've already kind of weaned the rich customers they have in that rich part of town's branch into using mobile product, ATM products and all that, and not being able to upsell them any further. They're saying, yeah, we're done. We don't need you anymore. We're closing this branch because we've exhausted our abilities in this zip code. That staff is not going to go help the staffing issues on the First Avenue address, so says the Business Journal. So what happens now that in this working class neighborhood, that's three quarters African American, that barely makes $27,000 a year on average, they have to go cash their checks at Walmart, at the money store or whatever inside of Walmart. Or they got to go to a check cashing place, you know, those stereotypical places that are next to liquor stores or sometimes are within a liquor store where you cash your check for a fee because you don't bank because you're unbanked. That's what the African American community is going to do. That's what the Hispanic community does in this town. When they don't have a bank, they spend money to cash their fucking check, and that's ridiculous. Or what's even scarier for someone who's on the wrong side of the tracks, I'll just say it that way. Someone who's in a community of color and they don't have a bank. You know how they have, you know, grocery deserts? Well, they have bank deserts too. And all of a sudden that this person, they want to cash their check and they're like, man, the only Wells Fargo that's open is in Vestavia Hills a few miles down the road. And all of a sudden this person has to drive from a community that's 74% African American to 87.7% white. And so many people of color will tell you stories about, you know, getting talked to by police or getting accosted because they're not on the right side of town. They're not on their side of town. Is it worth it for someone to go to the white side of town to cash their check? To some people it is, because to some people that means cashing their check allows them to have money to feed their family and pay their bills. But Wells Fargo is making a decision by temporarily closing that branch due to, quote, staffing issues, never really saying out loud that, hey, we can easily transfer over a couple of people to keep that place open at least for a bare-bones operation to allow people to cash their checks. Oh, no, you're gonna say, hey, our nearest location is, you know, a few miles down yonder where it's the same town, but it's a whole other side of town that you really don't belong in. You know, the way so says people in a community. And you know this, I live in an 85% Hispanic town. But you know, there's some parts of town where if I'm going, you know, and I get pulled over, a cop will ask you, well, what are you doing on this side of town? That's in every town. But Wells Fargo is basically saying, oh, it's easy. We have a convenient location over here. Well, it's not convenient to some people. So you're basically, you know, blocking them out of the branch that they're calling their own because of something that you could easily fix with your 250,000 employees. I've seen banks transfer over. I was a teller in 2008 when my former branch in Socorro, New Mexico, asked to borrow me from my branch here in Las Cruces, New Mexico, for a week to be a teller because someone was out sick or something like that. I was a teller, and I drove 150 miles to cover a teller role. Yes, that was 13 years ago, and shit does change. But the fact of the matter is this, it's not uncommon for people to borrow staff. If someone is really sick for the day, they'll tell, especially when we had two branches at Bank of America, our regional managers say, hey, you know, go down to the Amador branch for the day, because so-and-so is sick, and we need to have a manager on site there. That's on, like, hours' notice, for God's sakes. If they're knowing that they're closing branch, and they have another branch temporarily closing, well, if the whole point is closing down a branch, why are you fully staffing that other one that's going to close down when you can throw half of those people into the branch on First Avenue and reopen it up? Because they don't want to do that, because to them it's not worth being open. It's not worth flicking on the light switches, because the people that are going to go in aren't going to be able to get a home loan or get an auto loan or get a credit card or get a second checking account. They're there for a service. They're there to cash their check, withdraw money, or to complain about a fee or to complain about something else. That's all they're there for. And that's the way banks think, and it sucks. It's sick. That mentality of, you know, don't go to the other side of town is there in a lot of communities. And Wells Fargo is basically saying, hey, you know what? You have no side of town now. The rich white part of town is not going to have a Wells Fargo. And guess what? The black side of town, which doesn't have a lot of money, doesn't have a Wells Fargo either. So you're basically kind of smoking out all of your customers at that point and saying, hey, those digital banking options that we say that more people are choosing, you got to fucking do them now or you're not going to be able to bank with us anymore. So like I mentioned, you know, where's the staffing issues? If one bank is closing down, why not move some of those people over? Because it's not, it sounds so easy, but it's not to a place like Wells Fargo. It's more complicated than that. Whenever they say people are using online banking more, it's true. But it's 2021, for God's sakes. People are adapting. My grandma has a smartphone and it blows my mind. But she's not going to use online banking 3 times a day. If she wants to bank, she's going to go to the branch, okay? She's going to go to the branch and walk in and talk to someone if she wants to do that. She is going to more likely to do that than go online for her banking. Other factors, especially in those neighborhoods that are working class, you deposit your check via mobile or in the ATM, there might be an extended hold because of your average daily balance, which causes you to wait even longer for your money, days, sometimes up to 10 business days. And that impacts your ability to pay your bills. What if you have a payday loan going on? What if you need to pay your rent? Now you can't pay it for 7 days, which 7 days from now is March 7th, and all of a sudden you're going to be late on your rent. You might get an eviction notice at that point in time. There's no substitute for an actual bank at that point in time. You're weeding out who you want to weed out by doing stuff like this. And I hadn't heard Wells Fargo temporarily closing a lot of branches the way that Bank of America is doing, but they are doing it, and it just came to me on here. The fact of the matter is there's one rich side of town and one poor side of town. Both of them are technically losing their Wells Fargo branches, and one of them doesn't have a chance of reopening. And guess what? It's not the one that's closing down. I know that sounds weird and confusing, but that one's already done. Once they announce that they're closing down, they've already made it in their brain that we're out of here, we're out of this location. But subtly, they're out of the other location too, because if you were any manager, any executive worth their salt, and saying, "Hey, you know what? We can build up morale at this First Avenue address instead of, having 6 employees, we'll have 10. That way our customers will be helped, much better than last time." No, they're going to use staffing issues. And then you know what's going to happen? The Wells Fargo spokesperson is going to say, "Well, unfortunately, we closed the other branch in Vestavia Hills the other day, and we don't have the adequate staff to staff this other place now, and they've went on to other positions." No, you fucking liar. You could have offered them jobs at the other branch, and you could have opened it up. Staffing issues sound so stupid. It makes it sound like the Wells Fargo is run by a temp agency or something. It's not. Those are people that are there, that are trained, that aren't at work now. And then there's another bank that has a bunch of trained people that are not going to have work anymore. 1 + 1 should not equal 4, okay? That should be a simple equation to get people over to the other branch and get that place reopened. But frankly, I'm just believing that Bank of America and Wells Fargo are trying to curtail branches, and Wells Fargo is trying to curtail branches over here in Alabama, basically saying, "Hey, you know what? We're leaving this market because it's not really for us. Yes, there's this rich part of town here, and we're not making headway in it. So, we're gonna move on to another market in the hopes of getting new clientele over there." That's basically the way banks think, guys, and it's frustrating as hell. All I can do is complain about it, and all I can do is point it out to you. I want to link to it in the show notes, all the places, all the demographic stuff that I mentioned to you, because I really think it's intriguing and important. But long story short, whenever a bank closes, there's a lot to it. And what Wells Fargo said to me by permanently closing the Vestavia Hills branch in Birmingham, Alabama, saying, "Hey, we got as many rich people as we could. We don't see that this market is viable anymore. There's not enough new people rolling in. So, the customers that stick with us, we have some other locations if you want to go there, but we're shutting her down right now because, we've converted so many people over to digital banking that it's ridiculous." But on the other side of town, where African American community basically has less adaptation to mobile and online banking, and they have a lesser income and lesser ability to purchase big things like a home loan, "Oh, well, we're temporarily closed due to staffing. This damn virus, it's really taking a toll on our staff. So we're working hard to reopen as soon as possible, but we have options for digital and mobile banking as well as the ATM for our Wells Fargo customers." Basically saying, "Yeah, go figure it out yourself, okay? We have things that allow you to do most of the stuff that you could do in a branch, so figure it out yourself. We'll open whenever we feel safe." Well, they're feeling safe in Vestavia Hills, or at least until May 5th, right? Rich part of town continues to have the Wells Fargo, and although it's closing, that rich part of town still has a Wells Fargo for 2 months, and a working class community that so desperately needs a place to cash their checks and bank the way that they want to, oh, it's temporarily closed. Give me a break. Roll Tide to all my Alabama listeners and followers out there. I'm glad I was able to tell that story. Links in the show notes, be on the lookout for that. After this brief promotional consideration, I just want to get to a tweet that I saw from a City of Chicago alderman, which talked about something that I did a video on this past summer, so please stick around. Hey everyone, it's James, the Notorious Banker, inviting you to join me on my TikTok page. Yes, it's true, a 37-year-old man has a TikTok page. It's at Notorious Banker. The Notorious Banker on TikTok is going to continue to provide commentary about the news and notes from big banks and how they are impacting consumers nationwide. But we're going to add a little bit of spice to it. We're going to add a little bit of comedy, a little bit of music. I really think you can get a message across with entertainment, and TikTok does provide that. The Notorious Banker always had to provide scripting whenever he worked in the big banking industry, so scripting out skits to show people the horrors of big banking is no problem to me. So go to @NotoriousBanker on TikTok and see the creative mind that is yours truly, the Notorious Banker, fight back against big banks and inform the young people about the dangers of big banks. So once again, the Notorious Banker on TikTok, @NotoriousBanker. I hope to see you there. All right, everyone, I'm back with more Notorious Banker. Shout out to Alderman Matt Martin of the 47th Ward of Chicago, Illinois, former civil rights attorney, for posting something on Twitter that caught my eye early this morning. I saw it this afternoon and I retweeted it. And it's a simple tweet, and it's a link to a WBEZ article about the bank snubbing the City of Chicago's alderman on mortgage lending. And I'll get to that in just a second here, but the tweet is simple. It says, for every dollar that banks have invested in Chicago's white neighborhoods, they've invested 12 cents in black neighborhoods. So 88 cents out of every dollar goes to white neighborhoods and 12 cents goes to black. It would be one thing if it was 88% white and 12% black in Chicago. It's not. Unofficially, I know the demographics are somewhere around the neighborhood of 33 to 40% African American in Chicago. So the numbers don't really map out in terms of balance when it comes to lending, when it comes to mortgage lending. And there was an interesting tidbit that Alderman Martin said in this article that I'm going to read in just a second. And he says, and I quote, "The banks are fine to come to ask for the city's money. They're fine coming into communities asking for deposits. But when the time comes to ask any questions about using that money, they're nowhere to be found." A fucking men, Alderman Matt Martin. I love you. I don't know who you are. I haven't heard of you until today. I love you for that. It makes perfect sense. Because here's the thing, okay? And I did a video on this where I basically said that Bank of America, for every 80 plus cents that it lends in white neighborhoods in Chicago, Bank of America lends only 3 cents out of every dollar to black neighborhoods. And I was more of an anti-Bank of America jag at the time. It was more of I hate this place because it's ridiculous. 3 cents out of every dollar they lend to black neighborhoods. And it just blew my fucking mind. In a town like Chicago, which has a huge black community, 3 cents out of every dollar is pathetic. Not to mention Bank of America built a fucking $800 million tower in downtown Chicago that's just fucking sparkling and just gleaming with every bit of sunlight when the sun does shine in Chicago. And I've seen the Chicago market leaders and market managers say, "Oh, look at our beautiful offices, oh, blah, 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 blah." Well, guess what? A few miles down the road on the south side, people are struggling. People can't buy houses. People are paying fucking slumlords, you know, crazy amounts of rent to live in shitholes that are never going to get fixed. And you push the dream of, hey, you know what? You can own a home if you save and you do this with Bank of America. Yeah, sure. Yeah, right. Interesting thing about this story, WBEZ Chicago, and I'll be quick about this because I know you heard me talk a lot already. It says, Chicago City Council members who wanted to question banks on their weak lending records in Chicago's black and Latino communities were disappointed Friday when banks skipped out on a hearing called by the Housing and Real Estate Committee. At least some aldermen suggested the city might need a, quote, responsible lending ordinance, or perhaps even its own public bank to keep financial institutions in line. Now, the second paragraph is the one that pissed me off. Aldermen had invited Chicago's largest mortgage lenders to attend the hearing, but those who took a pass included Associated Bank, Bank of America, what a shock, Citibank, Fifth Third Bank, PNC Bank, U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, Wintrust, and J.P. Morgan Chase. Only Chicago-based Guaranteed Rate agreed to participate. though in the end, Alderman did not ask the lender to appear as the sole representative of the industry. They basically told the guaranteed rate guy, saying, you know, don't show up. I mean, this is ridiculous. All these other people aren't. We don't want to basically put you in the guillotine for everyone else's, you know, screw-ups as well. Yeah, your bank isn't doing that hot either, but we don't want you to speak for all these other companies who just ignored us. Alderman heard nearly 3 hours of testimony on the causes, impacts, and possible solutions to banks' dismal lending record in Chicago's Black and Latino communities. Now, here's the fucking thing about it, okay? And here's the thing that really pisses me off. I'm going to link to this in the show notes. You know, I said in the video that 3 cents of every dollar from Bank of America goes to Black neighborhoods here. A lot of people don't mention why. You know, a lot of people don't realize that Bank of America on June 2nd, 1 week after George Floyd's death, announced a $1 billion four-year commitment to end racial and income inequality in communities of color. And they announced that. They still talk about that to this day. Freaking 7 months later, they still talk about it, about how it's this big thing. It's like, oh, this is part of our Bank of America commitment for $1 billion over 4 years to help end racial and economic inequality. They give a bunch of masks and hand sanitizer to urban areas, and they say that's part of a $1 billion commitment to end racism, basically, which to me is the most ridiculous thing in the world. If you're giving someone hand sanitizer and face masks because of COVID, that's not ending racism. That's being a human being with a soul, okay? Okay, we're past the point of, hey, everyone has hand sanitizer to give. Let's give everyone a fucking medal. But, you know, if you want to change the world, you got to do better than just, hey, we're giving PPE out and we're giving hand sanitizer out to people. That's not ending racism. You know what ends racism? Wealth. Allowing people to own their own homes. Allowing people small business loans to develop these great ideas they have for small businesses. And I've went over 100 times, especially with Bank of America, how little they ignore entrepreneurs. They don't care about entrepreneurs. Unless you have a $250,000 annual revenue in your business or 2 years of experience in your field, they're not even going to look at you for a business loan. So forget that. And that's part of the $1 billion commitment to end racism as well. And then the second part is the commitment to lend people, to buy their first home, to invest in communities of color to make sure that they're thriving. Because at the end of the day, guess what? Banks make more money if a community is thriving, right? But there's some risk involved in that, of course, and banks just aren't taking that risk anymore. And that's the part that sucks for a lot of people here. Now my thing with the $1 billion four-year commitment that Bank of America made in June, the commitment to lend, a lot of people just think that Bank of America is giving money, and they're not. The commitment to lend is just that, a commitment. It's not a real thing saying, hey, we're going to lend to you even if you have bad credit, no problem. No, it's far from it than that. You still got to qualify, and then you still got to go through the hurdles of paperwork being missing, people ghosting your calls, all that other stuff, asking for appraisals, questioning the appraisals and all that. Bank of America does that. Bank of America has found a way to redline communities based on just all this minutia and all this way of stalling them out. All these methods of basically pretending to work for someone when in reality you're not really working at all. That's Bank of America in a nutshell with urban communities. So a commitment to lend, when they say that we're going to commit $1 billion, that's saying up to $1 billion. That's saying if this loan is approved, well, this is part of our commitment to lend to you. But if that person has bad credit or if they're not able to get through the process, then that's not part of the $1 billion. Okay, so my problem with this is twofold, okay? And I thank the alderman for bringing it up. Banks have said for the longest time, we want people to own their homes. We want people to you know, have great credit, and we want to lend to them. But why did all these mortgage lenders not attend this hearing? Chicago is not Las Cruces, New Mexico. Chicago is one of the biggest cities in the country, and all these banks that they mentioned, Associated, B of A, Citi, Fifth Third, PNC, U.S. Bank, Wells Fargo, Wintrust, and J.P. Morgan Chase, all of them have regional executives that are at least high up the totem pole that they probably know who the CEO is, probably took a piss next to him in the men's bathroom at some corporate meeting somewhere. Or, better yet, they're at least in a position of authority to where, you know what, even though if you're just a market president in Chicago, hey, I'm the market president for a major bank in a city that has millions of people. So yeah, I should be able to represent my bank to answer any questions possible. But that's not how big banks do it. Big banks don't want to answer those questions. So they were invited to talk about these lending records here, knowing they were going to get chewed out, knowing they're going to get excoriated based on the shitty lending practices that big banks have in communities of color in Chicago. And none of them showed up. They all skipped out on the hearing. No one committed to it, for God's sakes. And you know what those people did? I know what Bank of America and Wells Fargo did. They did nothing except have conference calls with other branches saying, hey, how did the Main Street banking center do today for new accounts? How many credit cards did you open today? Did you have any home loans? That's all they care about is sales, 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 okay? They didn't want to have a conversation that's a legit conversation about, hey, why is it that pretty much every single penny of every dollar goes to white neighborhoods and not African-American neighborhoods or Hispanic neighborhoods? They don't want to answer that because they don't want to be locked into a story. And I've said it before, and I just said it a few minutes ago too. Banks aren't redlining the way that they used to redline two decades ago. They're redlining in a different way where they're saying, hey, you know what? You can borrow. Just do this application here and we'll figure out the paperwork. You need to submit this. You need to do that or whatever. And then they find a way to kind of fudge the system to where it looks like they're actually processing stuff when in reality the clock is running out on you. And then they'll say, well, you know, we had to decline the transaction because we never received your 1099 at this point in time. So you'll have to reapply. And you know that you sent that 1099 along with all kinds of other things to the bank. And they say, oh, we didn't get it. So we had to cancel the transaction. And we had to start over. I am sorry. And then someone goes, fuck this. I don't want to bank with you guys ever again. I'm like, hey, we don't have to lend to this person. That's the way it is. And you know, there's new technological ways that banks do that. And it's so frustrating. And I can speak on that because one, I've seen it before as a person who offered home loans to people. And two, as I mentioned a million times in this podcast, I was actually a victim of this. I was sleeping on a floor for 7 days because of shit like this. I know the way they think because I've experienced it. I sent emails to important people saying, the bank that I work for is about to screw me out of my home and I'm literally homeless because of you guys. And I threatened to go to the media. I threatened to tell everyone that I knew. And they finally caved in. I got my house and they sold it 2 days later. It's an amazing world out there. And Chicago has a lot of high paying jobs. Yes, it has a lot of trouble too. And there's a lot of people that are here in Las Cruces from Chicago, from the Midwest. And they're aware of those things. But at the same time, people who live in Chicago know that there's so much more possibilities there if people invested, if people spent the time to lend. Communities could be better if people gave a shit. And all of these banks chose not to give a shit when it comes to speaking out about something that is really wrong in these communities. And I want to just shout out Alderman Matt Martin for that, because honestly, there was 3 hours of testimony on things that were going on in these neighborhoods with lending. I could speak 300 hours about this type of stuff. And frankly, you know, on this article, it says historically racist policies from redlining and predatory lending have created a current real estate landscape in which objective decision making based on criteria like credit scores and appraisals will continue to perpetuate inequity. So says Marissa Novara, Housing Commissioner of the City of Chicago. You're damn right. It's all numbers. I've said it before. Fantasy football, working in banking is fantasy football. The stats, the numbers either make sense to you to keep that person or to get rid of them. And in the Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, it's like, wow, this person has a 680 credit score, which is above our average. This appraisal for this house is this much money. We're going to make maybe this much money over a 30-year period. Or we can go to Silicon Valley, get the similar size house for $1.2 million, a person with 850 credit. Yeah, let's go to that guy instead. Oh, I'm sorry, person in Chicago. We lost your 1099. We lost your tax returns from last year. Can you fax it over to the branch again? We got to get it done by today, or otherwise we're not going to be able to do it. Stuff like that happens every single day. I fucking lived it. So shout out to Matt Martin. I'm going to link to this in the show notes. I hope to talk about this more in the future because this is an important question. And the Notorious Banker Project is here for these questions as well. I am working my ass off to make sure that my project is more publicly known because I need it to be publicly known for two reasons. I need to make money. I'll be frank with you. I need to earn a living. So patreon.com/notoriousbanker. If you believe in the Notorious Banker, if you believe in what I have to say, the passion that I have about these subjects, because it means a lot to me, guys. It means the world. And if you commit $1 or $2 to me, to my project, to what I do, I'll be forever grateful. But I'll also work my ass off to make sure that people don't run into these issues ever again. If someone is on Twitter, someone's on social, or someone just reaches out to me by email, which has happened before, and says, hey, I need help, I'm going to help that person because they deserve to be helped. Your monetary commitment can allow me to continue to do that full time. I want to do this full time for you guys because I love you guys and I want to kick ass for you. And I promise you I will kick ass for you if you give me a chance. Go to patreon.com/notoriousbanker. I accept Cash App and Venmo at The Banker Dude. Read about my story at thenotoriousbanker.com. Go to Bank Better Guy on Twitter. Take a look at all that. I promise you one thing, as we're heading into March 1st, and it just turned March 1st 6 minutes ago as I record this, I'm not going anywhere. Even if I had to work a 9-to-5 job cleaning toilets, I will gladly break out the soft scrub. I'll wash my hands to make sure I get that soft scrub smell out of my hands. And then I'll come to my computer and I'll fight back against Big Bang Street because goddammit, I love it. And I want to make sure that you get a chance. Alderman Matt Martin of the city of Chicago took a stand today or Friday and basically said to the big mortgage lenders out there, you guys are fucking up and we want to ask you questions about why you're fucking up. The banks ignored him. Well, you know what? The banks aren't going to ignore me whenever I let the general public see what a shit show it is. Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Chase, you are on call, my friends. You need to work better and work harder for your customers. Because guess what? I don't even get a paycheck for you guys. And 700,000 employees over those three banks cannot hold a candle to the Notorious Banker. My name is James Baca, also known as James the Notorious Banker. And I thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Once again, go to patreon.com/notoriousbanker. Commit to the Notorious Banker. Allow me to fight back for the customers against big banks. I'll be back in a few days with another amazing topic. But until then, my friends, I will talk to you soon. Love you all. You have a good day. Thanks.